I think that within the usual definitions, Mr. Hickok did know right from wrong. Confined as he was by the Macnaughton rule, the usual definitions, a formula quite colorblind to any gradations between black and white, Dr. Jones was impotent to answer otherwise. But of course the response was a letdown for Hickok's attorney, who hopelessly asked, "Can you qualify that answer?" It was hopeless because though Dr. Jones agreed to elaborate, the prosecution was entitled to object, and did, citing the fact that Kansas law allowed nothing more than a yes or no reply to the pertinent question. The objection was upheld and the witness dismissed. However, had Dr. Jones been allowed to speak further, here is what he would have testified. Richard Hickok is above average in intelligence, grasps new ideas easily, and has a wide fund of information. He is alert to what is happening around him, and he shows no sign of mental confusion or disorientation. His thinking is well organized and logical, and he seems to be in good contact with reality. Although I did not find the usual signs of organic brain damage, memory loss, concrete concept formation, intellectual deterioration, this cannot be completely ruled out. He had a serious head injury with concussion and several hours of unconsciousness in 1950. This was verified by me by checking hospital records. He says he has had blackout spells, periods of amnesia, and headaches ever since that time, and a major portion of his antisocial behavior has occurred since that time. He has never had the medical tests which would definitely prove or disprove the existence of residual brain damage. Definitive medical tests are indicated before a complete evaluation can be said to exist. Hickok does show signs of emotional abnormality. That he knew what he was doing and still went ahead with it is possibly the most clear-cut demonstration of this fact. He is a person who is impulsive in action, likely to do things without thought of consequences or future discomfort to himself or to others. He does not seem to be capable of learning from experience, and he shows an unusual pattern of intermittent periods of productive activity followed by patently irresponsible actions. He cannot tolerate feelings of frustration as a more normal person can, and he is poorly able to rid himself of those feelings except through antisocial activity. His self-esteem is very low, and he secretly feels inferior to others and sexually inadequate. These feelings seem to be overcompensated for by dreams of being rich and powerful, a tendency to brag about his exploits, spending sprees when he has money, and dissatisfaction with only the normal slow advancement he could expect from his job. He is uncomfortable in his relationships to other people and has a pathological inability to form and hold enduring personal attachments. Although he professes usual moral standards, he seems obviously uninfluenced by them in his actions. In summary, he shows fairly typical characteristics of what would psychiatrically be called a severe character disorder. It is important that steps be taken to rule out the possibility of organic brain damage, since, if present, it might have substantially influenced his behavior during the past several years and at the time of the crime. Aside from a formal plea to the jury, which would not take place until tomorrow, the psychiatrist's testimony terminated Hickok's planned defense. Next, it was the turn of Arthur Fleming, Smith's elderly counselor. He presented four witnesses: the Reverend James E. Post, the Protestant chaplain at Kansas State Penitentiary; Perry's Indian friend, Joe James, who, after all, had arrived by bus that morning, having traveled a day and two nights from his wilderness home in the far northwest; Donald Cullivan; and once again, Dr. Jones. Except for the latter, these men were offered as character witnesses, persons expected to attribute to the accused a few human virtues. They did not fare very well, though each of them negotiated some skimpily favorable remark before the protesting prosecution, which contended that personal comments of this nature were incompetent, irrelevant, immaterial, hushed and banished them. For example, Joe James, dark-haired, even darker-skinned than Perry, a lithe figure who, with his faded huntsman's shirt and moccasined feet, looked as though he had that instant mysteriously emerged from woodland shadows, told the court that the defendant had lived with him off and on for over 2 years.